honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and the incredible rescue story that unfolded in North Vietnam in the dark of night, August 6, 1972, in the early morning hours of August 7th, a day that neither Harry Zinsser nor Jim Lloyd has ever forgotten. If today's episode touches your heartstrings, maybe you want to find your way to Fresno, California on September 13th to welcome home this decorated rescue pilot from his honor flight to Washington, D.C. I have all that info for you at hometownheroesradio.com. And as we hear the conclusion of this incredible story, we're going to bounce back and forth between rescuer and rescuee. And we'll start with the perspective from the helicopter with Harry Zinsser.
So we go in. Our crewman reminds me, he says, sir, he says, we still have our coverage of materials on board. I said, that's okay, Smetsky. Call him Ski. I said, that's okay, Ski. Leave him right there because we're going to come back. Tell me later, he said, they gave him all the confidence in the world. I said, don't throw the materials overboard. So we go over to North Vietnam with confidential materials on board. We have our personal gear and everything. I was going to throw my personal gear overboard. So we head over land. He clicks the mic. He says, sir, would you say a prayer for us? They realize that these guys are guys that live in bars, our crewmen. They live in the bars. They didn't drink anybody under the table. He asked me to say a prayer. I said, see you. I said, I've already prayed once, but I'll pray again. Click the mic and I pray to the Lord to protect us. And sure enough, he did. So as we go over land, I expected all hell to break loose as soon as we crossed the beach. I report feet dry. Feet dry is when you cross the ocean, go from over the water, you go over land. Well, feet dry, man, it all hell to break loose. There wasn't a single shot fired. See anything coming at us? Yeah, we're just north of the van. Then I saw a ridge line up ahead, Karst line. And the words came to me from Psalm 121. We had to memorize Psalm 121 from our coaching and principal's class at Wheaton College. It says, I will look unto the hills from whence cometh my help. My help comes from the Lord, which made the heavens and the earth. I saw those hills, and I saw that verse came right to my mind there, like I had a HUD display on it.
So we've been talking about there's a pilot, he needs to be rescued, you guys needed gas. There's a lot of things that can go wrong here. But now you're coming over land, low, so surface-to-air missiles can knock you out of the sky. And then I think your visibility isn't great either, right?
Right, the visibility is getting reduced, the cloud layer.
But you see these hills, this karst, 3,500-foot plateau, and the first thing you think of is a verse you learned in a coaching class in college?
Yes, it's just amazing how that happened. And the last part of that verse said, he that keepeth Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. He'll guide your foot, and your foot will not move. I looked down on my boot, and I started adjusting the lights in the cockpit, and there's one peanut bulb. I had a light on it, and it was shining on my boot. Should not suffer thy foot to be moved. I looked at my foot that night, and I saw it. I believe that light shined right on my boot. My boot's going to stay there all night long. And I looked up several times in the rescue, and I saw the light shining off my boot.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I want to understand what the significance of that is to you. So when you look at your boot not moving, that represents the mindset that you had in that moment?
Yes. Just renewed my confidence that the Lord was with us, and he's going to bring us out of this. He's going to bring us through this.
So you've got how many people on board this helicopter?
Four people on board the helicopter right now.
Yourself, your co-pilot, two crewmen. You've got a pilot on the ground whose life is in your hands. And then you mentioned you have all your personal materials and classified information that if the enemy gets a hand on it, could wreak a lot of damage, right?
Or gets in a lot of trouble, that's for sure.
The stakes of this mission are pretty high.
They're building up now, yes, they're building up now.
So what happened next?
So we go over land, and we now have to make an IFR descent. We're 3,500 feet across the ridgeline. But there's now a cloud layer. There's a black night now, it's a cloud layer. We have to get below those clouds. So we set our radar altimeter 200 feet. We're going to spiral descent down through the clouds. We break out through the clouds before we hit 200 feet. As soon as we break through the clouds, we see a pencil flare go off. So man, this is going to be a piece of cake. Found a haystack, now we're going to find a needle in a haystack. We just found a needle, so we thought. So we head for it. Our MC commander, he says, hey, get out of there, big man. It's a trap. It's a trap. Get out of there. So now we figure, oh crap. So we pull in power. We had reset our radar altimeter to 30 feet. Our radar altimeter is a Ross warning, saying we're below 30 feet. So I turned on a spotlight just in time because there's a grove of trees ahead of us. It's about 100 feet high. We're at 30 feet. We're just in time pulling power. We cross over trees. more trees. My left foot low. The guy pointed, aiming a gun at us with our spotlight on. And I see muzzle flashes going off. Scared the heck out of me. So we banked hard to the right, banked hard to the right. Then Jim comes up and realizes, says, I'm at your six. We actually passed over him. We didn't realize we had passed over him. We did.
Jim is Jim Lloyd, the pilot who had gone down. You two have been friends ever since, but at this point, you've never met him. So you hear the pilot saying, I'm at your six. That means he's behind you.
That's right. It means we just passed over him. Mm-hmm. So we turn around. He says, I'm at your six. As we're turning, we see I see a figure of a guy running. He's got his arms crossed like this. He's in an American flight suit. So I figure that's him. He says, come right 10 degrees, big mother. So he turned right. He said, no, your other right. And that's a common mistake that pilots make.
Because it was his right, but not your right.
Yeah, but we know exactly what I meant, because that's what happens. That we just switched to measure train at Fallon, Nevada. That happens at Fallon, Nevada all the time. So we learned that. So he said, your other right, and there's exactly what I meant. So he came there. No, he's scared because now he's going to show a light. He said, show a light, damn it, show a light. He's afraid to turn on his light because his light, he has a strobe light, but it's sewn into the collar. Now he's got to show a light, so he didn't want to show a light. But I said, hey, man, if you want to get rescued, you got to show a light. So he finally turned the light on and saw a strobe. As soon as the strobe went on, about four of the strobes went off, immediately went off in the area. So they were watching. I sent a crewman, he was behind me, he said, sir, he says, it was the first strobe that went off. Sure enough, that was him.
So I just want everybody to understand, you know, what you guys are dealing with. He turns his on, and then immediately four others go on. So for you, in the dark, you could have picked any one of those five. You got an 80% chance of picking the wrong one and dying.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But because one of your crew members saw the first one and knew where it was, that's where you went. Yeah. Were you at all hesitant to go to that one?
No, because we saw him running. So we headed that direction, and then we saw him running. So it was him then.
He spotted me, and he went off about 100, 200 yards from me and went into a hover, and I just took off. Well, it sounded like I had the whole North Vietnamese Army on behind me. My night vision was gone because I was looking in that landing light. I couldn't see him, but I could hear him, and I just, as fast as I could run, he was in a hover. Of course, the noise now was deafening. Again, I didn't have a helmet on. I was getting beat up by mud and rocks, and I hooked on. We had a snap link on our torso harness that we hooked onto the cable, and I hooked on, closed my eyes, and waited to be hauled up, and nothing. And I looked, and the helicopter was sitting right next to me in the mud. He had landed to get below a deflection angle of the AAA gun, a 37 millimeter that was right next to him, and he had to get below it before he was shot down. In fact, one of the A6s overhead later had said they saw that the guns going off, and then the lights of the helicopter going out, and they thought they shot it down. Well, the North Vietnamese thought they shot it down, too. As I went to jump in the helicopter and with the weight of the cable on top of me, of course, I was completely worn out by then, and then he was holding power to keep from sinking in the mud, so his struts were extended, so it was about neck high, the deck of the helicopter, and I went to jump in and knocked myself the wind out of me. Just then, the gunner looked there. The gunner was standing over me shooting. He stopped shooting and reaches over with his outstretched hand, and I could see his face in the dark. And then he's saying, come on, come on. And that, I can say, that image I'll never, ever, ever forget. I could have been on the moon and not felt any more further away from home. And here, there was this American pulling me in the helicopter. He grabbed the back of my flight suit and pulled me in. In the meantime, since the helicopter landed, turned the lights off, as I mentioned, the North Vietnamese thought they shot it down. And so they were storming the other side, and Matt Szymanski held them off. He said years later, he said, I was laying them down like cordwood. The helicopter took off. I remember it vibrating real bad from the strain of the engines and pulling off. And we had 21 long miles to go to the coast. They were jinking to keep from being hit. You know, I didn't have any safety lanyard on like the gunners did, but I'd be jinking. I was afraid of being thrown out the open door, so I lay on the floor, afraid I'd be get shot to the floor, and I was going through shock again. And one of the gunners grabbed my arm, set me in a seat, strapped me in, off we went. And right before we got to the coast, two fireballs went about 30, 40, 50 feet from us.
Jinking is a maneuver. It was designed that if you jink at the right time, if you place a crewman at the back, and he sees a missile coming at you, he calls break now, a heat-seeking missile, you jink. Or left the missile miss you. Mm-hmm. So I just had a gut feel, let's jink. So I jinked to the right, and a missile goes by us on the left side. Of course, it's, geez, they're shooting missiles at us. Jink the other way, sir. So stand by, ski. I jinked to the left, another one goes by us on the right. They're usually fired in pairs. We did not know that. Had I jinked a second or two later, we wouldn't be here today. Then we crossed the Karst line, and we did all rotation down to about 200 feet. We didn't want more missiles fired at us. Then we're at the water's edge line and reported feet wet. It's amazing. There were six aircraft that I reported right in order. I imagine they went in order seniority. They ate Big Mother, Sear Hotel. Good job. And now we had to get gas. So the little fuel lights had been on for about 15 minutes. So I knew we had a good 5 minutes of gas left. We started to gradually climb up a little bit higher. And it was, sure enough, they brought a ship into us. It was a Cleveland. It was an LPD. It had a big deck on it. We landed there.
There's a lot going on there. I didn't live this. You did. But when you are staring at limited fuel and not knowing if you're going to make it to a ship in time to fuel up, is there some kind of thought or conversation about, we've been through all this and now we're going to run out of fuel?
Yeah, that certainly goes through your mind. And that's what I thought about. You measure fuel very closely.
And then one of the gunners grabs my shoulder and points down, and I can see the breakers of the North Vietnamese coastline. We were feet wet. As I say, a savior of the naval aviator. At least if we went down, the Navy would get us if we survived the crash. But we landed on the Cleveland. I didn't even know what kind of ship it was. Shut down, and that's when I met the crew the very first time, who became lifelong friends. And I got out of the helicopter. The commanding officer of the ship and his medical officer came up to shake my hand and jumped back. Like I said, I must have looked the sight, and I smelled a heck of a lot worse. Anyway, we found out we'd had 13 holes in the chopper. The sponson was shot off. There was a crease in the tail rotor, and they had way less than 5 minutes of fuel, which is nothing. I mean, those gauges aren't even accurate for probably 10 minutes of fuel, plus or minus. So that was another miracle.
Obviously, you've had a lot of time to think about this. You've written it up. You've seen what Jim's written. You two talk every year on the 6th of August. Is there a moment or two within that whole ordeal that you still think about and marvel and say, how in the world did that happen that way?
Oh, yes. I still remember very vividly. We were looking out the left side after turn on the spotlight. A guy standing there aiming at us with his gun. He said, muzzle flash is going off. And I have a picture, a lot of the light shining on my boot. The Lord said, he shall not suffer thy foot to be moved. Told he that keepeth Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep.
Something tells me you probably never looked at that passage, Psalm 121, the same either.
That's right, yeah.
It kind of makes it come alive a little bit.
Sure does, yes.
And what did it feel like when you finally went to bed that night? I mean, what? Because that's, you know, everybody can identify with that. The end of a long day, what do they think of? What do they reflect on? Do you remember what you reflected on that night?
Well, we landed our skipper. He had landed on the ship first, so he was there waiting for us. I remember he hugged us. Hey, skipper, put me down. He hugged me. He kept hugging me. I felt a little embarrassed, you know. Skipper, put me down. And then we all went in the wardroom. Jim Lloyd, he went in too. And he came out, and then he was in a set of PJs. We just celebrated that night for a couple hours in the wardroom. We were inspecting the helicopter the next day. We had a total of 12 bullet holes in the helicopter. One shot at Razor Terror drive shaft. Had been a couple inches lower, we may not be here either.
So 12 bullet holes in your helicopter, and one of them was in the tail rotor's crankshaft. So if that was just a very small amount higher or lower, that would have knocked you guys out of the sky or made it so you couldn't control it?
Yes, it would have been a little bit lower. It just grazed the top of the turbo drive shaft.
Well, and I know that you've done a lot of teaching in your life. I mean, you spent 26 years in the Navy, and then when you retired, you started the junior ROTC program at Lemoore High School near NAS Lemoore. And so you taught a lot of future naval officers. I'm wondering what August 6th, 1972 taught you, because that's an experience. That's one day in your life that you've probably spent more time talking about that day than any other day in your life. What was the lesson of that day? What did it teach you?
Well, the big thing it taught me was the Lord was with us that night. He certainly was. People ask you, were you scared? Well, you're not scared at the time. You're so busy.
Well, and you say that, you know, that's what it taught you. So I'm just wondering if there are other things in the 50 years since that maybe you faced with a different degree of confidence because you were able to get through that night.
I think so. It makes you put other things in perspective, I think. Like, you don't worry about the small stuff anymore.
I would say for anybody, believe in yourself. You'd be amazed at what you could do. And if it's an overwhelming obstacle ahead of you, just remember, if you eat an elephant, you eat an elephant a bite at a time. You just one step at a time to get through it. Believe in yourself. You could, if you really want to do something, you can.
Well, maybe, just maybe, there's a little perspective there for the challenges in our own lives. Rescuer Harry Zinser, rescuee Jim Lloyd. You'll find a lot more to explore with both of them at hometownheroesradio.com. And if you do live close enough, come join that cheering throng to welcome Harry home from his honor flight September 13th in Fresno, California. The 68 other veterans aboard that flight include Purple Heart Marines, decorated fighter pilots, and everything in between. And wherever you're listening, there's likely an honor flight with the same kind of humble heroes, never asking for anything, but receiving more than you realize when you just offer up a simple thank you for their service to our country. That's all the time we have today. Thank you for listening to Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.